Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Misha Tate, and you're listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Stitch Duran, and you're listening to Carson's Corner. Make sure you stay tuned in.
This is Justin Ray Harvey, Frank Duke's student. You're listening to the best of the best shows on the web and beyond. Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Bo, the one-man army Taylor, media darling and Midwest champion of the world. You're listening to the only radio show that's hard-hitting, keeps it real, and does not pull punches. Carson's Corner.
This is the coach, Sean Tompkins, and you're listening to the best in mixed martial arts, Carson's Corner.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, g'day, this is Justin Lawrence calling from my backyard in Australia, mate. You're listening to Bob Carson, the finest investigative journalist in mixed martial arts history. Listen to his show, I love it.
Hey, this is Joey Odessa, and you're listening to me on the Bob Carson Show, the show that lets no words barred give a whole new perspective to no holds barred.
These days, it's not much fun at Bally's and Caesars in Atlantic City. The CEO is playing the corporate greed game, cutting dealers' hours, cutting retirement and health benefits, even breaking the law by refusing to bargain. Yet he paid himself $39 million last year, with plenty of perks.
Place your bet.
When Bally's and Caesars play games with casino dealers, it's not fun for anybody. And everybody loses. That's why the UAW Atlantic City Dealers Union paid for this time.
I just realized I didn't have my friggin' microphone on this whole time. So there was dead air for like 7 minutes or so. Oh, my God. That's ridiculous. I apologize, folks. I don't know if that happened. If I've been on the air, not on the air, but just my microphone muted for 7 minutes. If so, I apologize. You're listening to Carson's Corner. This is Bob Carson. And I was talking about, in case you didn't hear this, I was talking about Kurt Pellegrino. And I was talking about his career a little bit, his facility, which is located in Wall off of Belmar Avenue. Great, great place for grappling and striking. I've been training there for about 2 or 3 months now. And I train there 5-6 days a week. I do grappling mainly, and I do kickboxing. We do sparring there. It's everything you could want to develop and harness your skills as a grappler, as a kickboxer, and as an MMA fighter. It really is. So, Kurt, you know, as I mentioned, probably when I had my microphone off, was a two-time state champion or state finalist here in New Jersey. Wrestled for Point Pleasant Borough, I believe, and was really one of the first guys to really, really combine wrestling and jiu-jitsu so well, and you know, match up against anybody in his division on any given day. And he had a very, very good UFC career, and he could have went 8-4 in his UFC career if some decisions had gone his way, which sometimes it's just the luck of the draw with those decisions and whatnot. And I think Kurt has really helped develop the blueprint for the next generation of grapplers inside the cage. He's a coach. He's a mentor. Again, anybody that's interested in training and grappling, MMA, kickboxing, I highly recommend Pellegrino's. It is a fantastic environment where you'll be pushed and you'll be rewarded through the progress. You'll make a lot of progress there. That I can assure you. We also are scheduled to have Dan Quinn on the program. We have many, many listener emails for Dan building up since his absence. You recall we interviewed Dan last week, or no, three or four weeks ago, and Dan is doing well. He's hospitalized right now. He is in a mental institution, but he's doing well. You could tell he's much, much calmer. He is really, really in a good state of mind now, I think. I mean, I've known Dan for 11 years now, and I could say that, he's doing well. He's calm. He's managing himself, and he got down to 160 pounds or something like that, Now he's back up, and now he's in the process of losing weight. And if you know Dan, you know damn well that he can definitely manage his weight very, very well. So we have that, and we may hear from Justin Ray Harvey. He may call in the next hour. He's going to be coming to the state of New Jersey, so we're very, very excited about that. Justin has really never been to New Jersey. He's only been out of West Virginia a few times, and it's going to be really, really exciting. We're probably going to look to have him come up to New Jersey sometime in in January. It should be fun. So, yep, we got a whole big show here for you planned here. We switched the category of the show. We're no longer a progressive show. This is an MMA show now. And we are going full-fledged here. We're going out and about, and we're very, very excited to broadcast in 2020. I can't say a lot of good things are happening in mixed martial arts. I mean, the UFC, to their credit, is having fights every week. I think it's great that they're doing it. But, you know, it's like the same fighters that are fighting. It's just like the same handful of fighters. And I think a lot of it has to do with management companies. You know, the management companies are looking to make money, and they weren't making money during the COVID lockdown, shutdown, and now they're trying to make money. So they're really cycling the same amount of fighters on these cards. And so we're not really seeing, you know, the full-fledged UFC roster at this point. All right, without further ado, let's go to Mr. Kurt Pellegrino. He joins us here on Carson's Corner. Kurt, how are you, my friend? Thank you for calling in.
Good. And sorry for being 11 minutes late. I totally slipped my head.
No problem, man. I figured that you got a lot going on at your gym, which I've been telling the audience about. You're making room, more room for the many students that are signing up. It is a great environment, great atmosphere, and I know there's a lot of good things to come in the future there.
Oh yeah.
Now, I want to talk about there's so much to talk about. You had some of the best combined wrestling and jiu-jitsu, I think, in the sport. And I think you helped define the blueprint for the next generation of grapplers, both, you know, with your fights inside the cage and as a coach and a mentor. But before we talk about that, Kurt, talk a little bit about your early life and background. What was your childhood like? Were you one of those kids who had a lot of energy or who were very physical or you know, anything that would lead you to believe that you'd become a fighter?
I never ever thought I was ever going to be a fighter, to be honest with you. I think what separated me from a lot of kids is I'm trying to instill this in my son and my daughter now, and my two little ones that are coming up, is I always had goals, and I always knew what I wanted. And when I was a kid, I wanted to be a state champ and wrestle in the Olympics, and that's the only thing I really cared about. I didn't really care about working or this or that, and I wasn't the type of people that, like, say they're going to do something and don't do it. Like, I legitimately did it. And I set my goals, and being a kid, I didn't think hanging out with my friends were as important as going to the wrestling room and hanging out with my coaches and my wrestling friends. Those were my friends that you know, they never turned your back on you kind of a deal. You know what I mean? So I think as a young kid, I competition and winning and working out was always way more important to me than anything else. I really didn't care about anything else besides doing that. And my father saw that as a he saw that in me when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's a great mindset, and that is a mindset for success, in my opinion. And as a wrestler, you were a two-time finalist for the state championship in high school. Am I correct?
Two-time finalist, yep, in high school.
Okay, and did you face the same person both times, or are they separate opponents?
Separate opponents.
Okay. And you wrestled for Point Pleasant Borough or Point Pleasant?
Point Pleasant Borough.
Cool. Yeah, you were clearly an excellent wrestler, one of the best, I think, in New Jersey. But am I right in saying that you didn't continue with it far past high school? Was that something that you considered?
No, I went to college. I was actually ranked 8th in the country. And I wrestled. I actually won the Trenton State Open, which is a really big tournament. I think that's what is it called now? TC what? TCNJ, yeah, is what it's called now, the College of New Jersey. So I won that, and then the first I had a lot of full rides, and I just had to pass my first semester at Gloucester Community School, and the Gloucester Community School wrestling was like, it wasn't an invitation only, but it pretty much was, and they were national champions. They had multiple national champions on their team for JUCO. And I went there. I was the 157 starter. And when I failed my first semester, I didn't know what to do. So I just came home. I got a job, and I worked for the town of Point Pleasant Borough Public Works. And to be honest with you, I didn't really like wearing an orange sweater, a sweatshirt or a T-shirt every day, knowing that you set goals when you were a little kid to become something greater than what you're doing then. I just really didn't sit in. And then one day someone gave me a call and told me to come fight UFC. I didn't even know what that was. But I went there and I just beat the kid up really bad. And that was the end of it. I said, okay, well, this will be my Olympics, because I didn't know how to get to Colorado. I didn't know how to join the Olympic team. I just figured that this would be the next closest thing of competition, and it really was.
You got talk us through how you got introduced to submissions generally. I mean, and was this something you found and you excelled at right away?
Yeah, I mean, I got my black belt within 5 years of me training, and I beat the who's who of black belts before I was a black belt in submission no-gi grappling. But you know, I started training, and when I was training jiu-jitsu, the whole purpose was to fight in the UFC. Like, there's a lot of people, and I'm sure everyone could agree with this. Everyone looks at people fighting in the UFC, or they look at, these superstars that have these professional grappling matches, and they think, like, if you wear the same clothes, if you say you're a sponsored fighter, like, you're a somebody. I never cared about any of that stuff. I just wanted to make it, and I tried to stay as quiet as I possibly could and very humble. And thankfully enough, we didn't have Instagram to, like, make you something that you're not, or Facebook to make you something that you're not. I just purely loved to win. I didn't care if there was a person in the crowd. I didn't walk around holding my phone with Snapchat on me. You know what I mean? Like, I just did it because I liked winning. And when I won the Pan Ams in the gi in Santa Barbara, that's when I came into work. And I was like, yo, I really have a future, and I'm going to quit. And it was like, I'd be a boss right now. I'm 41 years old. I had that job when I was 19. Like, I'd be retiring probably in like 10 years, maybe 5. And I quit that job, and I remember everyone telling me not to do it because of the security, and this was the reason why I had to do it. That's why I got my hands tattooed, because I never wanted to be comfortable and work in the workforce again. I just wanted to prove everyone wrong, and then there came my dream of when I was a kid again. and I felt alive.
Yes, that's absolutely amazing. I can totally identify with that. I know a lot of people that are not 9-to-5 guys, and they have to be emotionally invested in something that they really like, and they really can push themselves through. And that's what I love about jiu-jitsu.
And look,
and
you know, there's people that like lose everything. I respect those guys. I mean, I've known kids that wrestled and, you know, or have done jiu-jitsu and saw myself elevate to a level where they're never going to get. And
sure.
They weren't like, they weren't upset with that. They just enjoyed the process of watching it happen. And I enjoyed the process of them being humble and understanding that there's some people in this world that are going to be great. And there's some people that's not. But the people that aren't, even if they've never won anything, if they're just a great student and don't expect anything besides learning, those are the people you want around you for the rest of your life. I mean, man, I'm great friends with Miguel Torres, Dustin Poirier, Kenny Florian. I can call them whenever I want. But we don't hang out every day. I hang out with guys that might not ever fight in the UFC or ever do Abu Dhabi. Those are the guys that are in the gym working their ass off. I mean, Bob, how long have you been a white belt for? When I gave you the blue belt, that meant something to me.
Absolutely.
You're a hard worker, and that to me, those are the people that I surround myself, and I could get great. Even I can level up my game by just being around you, watching you train.
Absolutely,
and that's
transfers.
What I think people are missing. Yeah.
Yeah. No, everything you're saying is oh man, because I agree. That's my only expectation is to get better. I just want to get better. I'm there to push myself and get better. My only expectations are to hard work and get better. And I don't see that with a lot with some people. I think they want to be just in general world beaters overnight. And you know what? Most likely that's not going to happen. But you know, if you're getting something, I think it was Coach Joseph that says, in jiu-jitsu, there's no such thing as losing. There's only learning. And if you have that attitude, then you can't go wrong.
You know, I have a thing, too. I've been saying it. I mean, I've been probably saying this for 15 years. I call it like the Kurt Pellegrino disease. People, and then I just said it to a head coach from Point Pleasant Borough, Coach Pat Brady, and he started laughing. And I said, yo, I'm not meaning it to be like a cocky or arrogant. I'm saying people walk through this door, they look at all my stuff that I have, everything that I've done in this sport, and they're like, I'm gonna do this too. I didn't walk into this sport saying I'm gonna do this. I was born into it. I was raised to win and to compete and do this. I don't do it because I wanted to wear UFC gloves. I didn't care about wearing UFC gloves. I didn't care about walking out with the banner. I didn't care about the sponsors. I just wanted to step inside the UFC and prove how great I was and how great I can become. And a lot of people get mad at me because they're not getting what they think I have to give them. And it was never me that had to give them something. It was they have to go get it themselves.
Yep.
To become great, you have to do things alone. You know, my father was my wrestling coach. My dad knew wrestling, but he didn't know wrestling. I didn't need my coaches. I didn't need my coach Vinny or coach Dan there. I knew what job I had to get done, and I did it. You know, and people need to, when you have something great, you have to just realize that you can become great too, but you have to want it more than I want it. And that's what I call, and I've seen a lot of fighters come in, and a lot of fighters leave because this sport, they'll chew you up and spit you out.
Yep.
And it's tough, and I feel bad because I want to see the people do it. I just can't do it for the people.
No. No, you got to want to get better. You got to want to do it more than, and like you were saying earlier, wrestling was the only thing that was important to you was wrestling, getting better. That's it. And that type of mindset is really, really, and if you listen to the elite people in MMA in any sport, they have that type of mindset. They have the right, it's a championship mindset that you have to have to really, you know, I think to really excel and really, really do this stuff, you know, and you can't teach it. Or maybe you can. I don't know. It has to come from within, though, I think.
You know, I think teaching that You know, I have a kid in the gym, Francis Marshall.
Yeah.
I had the kid since he was 13. He, again, this is just one of, I like to see people work harder than him. I mean, I have some great students, right?
Yep.
And I'm not taking nothing away from them. But this kid goes boxing 3 days a week. He does strength and conditioning 3 days a week. He's in the gym morning or night. And he's wrestling on top of those hours. I'm like, Francis, you're living the most miserable life in the whole world. Are you sure you want this? And he goes, it's just something I want. And, it is what it is. And I said, well, let me ask you a question. And this is what always kind of resonates with me. Francis Marshall was one of the hardest working kids I've ever seen. And he still is. He's definitely going to be in the UFC. There's not a doubt in my mind. And not only that, like, he has a chance to be one of the greats. He doesn't care about anything besides getting his hand raised. I try to get him sponsors. He don't care. He's like, listen, I just need you here at this moment. I need you to coach me in this moment. I don't even roll with Francis. I haven't rolled with Francis in probably 3 years. And he just, like, as long as you're there, that's good enough for me. I go, Francis, what are you going to do? Like, I retired from the UFC. What happens if I don't want to go, but I get you in the UFC? Do I have to go? His exact words were, well, then I quit. And I was like, but all that hard work. He's like, yeah. He's like, I don't need you to do anything. He's like, just show up. Just show up to the UFC. And I'm like, okay, Fran. How am I going to take someone's dream away that works hours and hours? I gave him my boxing coach. You know, I give him strength and conditioning coaches. And I'm just like, your work isn't done with me and you wrestling or me teaching you. Your work is done alone. That's how you grow.
Right.
And this kid is just like, I mean, the things that I hear from other coaches and wrestling coaches is just amazing. And I'm just like there. I'm like Miyagi. I'm like, well, you want to move this way, not that way. You want to move.
Yeah.
You want to go down when you should go up. And the way he moves around and the things that he does is just amazing. And I'm very fortunate to have someone like that. So it's really well. It's really good.
Yeah, he's an undefeated, for those of you who don't know, he's an undefeated MMA fighter. I think, Kurt, if I'm not mistaken, he's a purple belt under you. And he also wrestled for Point Borough. Point Pleasant Borough.
Point Borough. Yeah, he could probably easily wrestle in a Division I school. He only wrestled for 2 years and he played football, but that was just for fun. But then I told him no more football his junior year, and that's when he went to Point Borough. And then his senior year, he actually holds the single season most takedowns in a season at Point Pleasant Borough.
And he's a young guy.
This kid
is what, 22, 23?
21.
Oh, wow. Yep.
I mean,
there you go.
Big things are going to come from him. But again, like, I just keep him out of the lights and just keep him humble and keep him winning.
Yep. I want to go back to your career. How did you acquire the nickname Batman?
So, you know, going back to when I was a kid, me and my dad were always going to wrestling tournaments like I'm trying to do for my son now. And I didn't pack my bag like I was supposed to. And he woke up late, which he wasn't supposed to wake up late. We ran to the tournament. I grabbed whatever was in my closet, and it was a T-shirt and a pair of sweatpants. And I was embarrassed to wear sweatpants and a Batman T-shirt. I've never won a tournament. I've always been in the finals, but never got my hand raised in the finals. And I asked my dad if I could get a new wardrobe. And he said, you know, you can get one thing, a T-shirt or a pair of shorts. So, you know, I said, I'll take a pair of shorts and I'll just turn the Batman shirt inside out. And that was the first tournament I won in Pemberton, New Jersey.
Wow.
I actually pinned Rob Booth in 56 seconds, if you really want to know.
Yeah. What, that was what, before you were in high school, right?
Yeah, that had to be like fifth grade.
Wow. That's amazing. And as far as your fights go, your fights were anything but easy. I mean, even though it was early in his career, you fought Mac Danzig in your first pro fight. Is that correct?
My first fight was Mac Danzig. Yeah.
That's very impressive. Because he was training with Rico Ciparelli Raw team and some great wrestlers at the time.
Oh, yeah. He was, I don't know back then. I think he was just a regular club kid. I think he was out of Pennsylvania. And then when I fought him, and then he moved because he realized the sport was going to take off. And then he moved to like California, I believe. And then I fought him in the WEC for the belt, which I won.
Wow. How did you approach that fight? Did you lean on your wrestling, or what was that like?
Well, I didn't know how to fight, to be quite honest with you. I mean, I was just a wrestler. I was a blue belt in jiu-jitsu. I mean, I was hanging with black belts, but losing at this point.
Uh-huh.
But I was doing very well. My wrestling is what I really, really relied on. And I had a fight with someone, and I forget who he was from, but he would have been an easier fight from Team Punishment. And I'll never forget it either, because I wanted to fight him because I looked up to Tito Ortiz, you know, like I didn't look up to him. Like I never got autographs from people, but like he was someone like, you know, UFC would come on every 3 months and you would watch it and Tito would be defending his belt. And I loved the whole entrance that he did. I thought that was so cool. So I was fighting one of his guys. And back then everyone, you know, those guys came to those fights to corner their guys. And he got hurt like a week and a half, 2 weeks before the fight. So the week before the fight, I started like, eating and like depression, like, oh, my fight's off. I was going to win a WC championship belt. This sucks. And then they called me on, I think, Saturday, and I left on Thursday to Mohegan Sun. So like I stopped training when I should have had my last hard week of training, and then I fought Mac Danzig.
Right.
He stepped up to fight, and I got to tell you, that fight was great because I just kind of pressured him with wrestling and punch like ground and pound, but like I was completely exhausted, like the adrenaline dump with the lights and like, I mean it was the real deal. It was crazy. Like, I was fighting in the UFC, but it was the WEC, you know, with all that production. I never seen such a thing. Like, I really made it. And then I knew I needed to take some time, but I wasn't sure. But I didn't know if it was a good thing or a bad thing, or he was helping me out. I kind of looked at it at the time that he was just a douche. But I saw Tito in a bar in the Mohegan Sun, and I had the belt on. Like just a proud, happy guy with a belt on at the WC championship. And I walked over to Tito and I was like, "Hey Tito, what'd you think about my fight?" And he goes, "You better work a lot harder if you're going to make it to the UFC." And he walked away from me and I called him an asshole. I didn't think people would, you know, I didn't know that the superstars talk to like up and comers like that, or superstars would talk to a fan that way. You know what I mean? So I kind of took that on the chin. I walked away and I said, "I'm never going to talk to someone like that if they ever ask me. I'm going to just, I'm not going to hurt someone's feelings. Just going to tell them they did great."
Good for
you, know,
you,
and,
man.
That really made me work hard. And I took a year off and tried to get better at boxing. I actually they wanted me to defend the belt like 6 months later. And I said, I'm just going to relinquish the belt. I want to get my hands better, and that's all I did was started boxing.
There you go. It's that mindset again. Just get better. That's it. How did you get the call for the UFC?
The call for the UFC. So my first wife, I was getting married, and it was the day before the wedding. And my manager called me and said, "You're going to hate me for this, but you would hate me even more if I let you go, if I let you have fun." And I said, "Don't even tell me." And he's like, "You got the call to fight in the UFC, and it's in 4 weeks." And I tried canceling my wedding that same night. Because to me, like some fighters, like this is a lot of the problems I have with fighters or people training for something. When I made it to the UFC, when I was training for a wrestling match, you could die and I wouldn't go to the funeral if I was in a camp. Because my main focus is one thing. I didn't go to birthday parties. I didn't go to funerals. I didn't go to parties with my friends. I didn't go out to dinner. I stayed focused at the task at hand. And when my engagement was over, then I would try to resume regular life. It wasn't a great life, right? But it was the life that I wanted. And a lot of my fighters, except someone like Francis, who is one of them, and I'm hoping that Coach Rob Souza is falling in line to my craziness. And I always tell people, if you can suffer for your greatness, at the end of that, whether you win or lose, you have to be happy with that outcome. Because if you can lose, and I go, hey, man, did you hang out with your girlfriend past 10 o'clock or 11? Did you go to a family party? Did you go to your mom's birthday on a Thursday night when we should have been doing, you know, no-gi and wrestling afterwards? Like, did you go to that party? And they can say, yeah, but it was just one party. It was just one birthday. It was just one birthday dinner. And I'm like, yeah, I never had one birthday dinner for myself. I didn't celebrate Christmas. Like, it was just winning. And that's crazy. It's intense, and I get it. But that worked for me, and I try to get my guys to do the ultimate sacrifice. I mean, even if it was my 40th birthday party, and I wanted Francis or Rob or Coach William Walk to come, I would tell them not to come, to stay home.
Yeah. That's like a David. It reminds me of David Goggins. You know, people. Oh, it's extreme, but I think that that's what you need to get better, and that's what you need to do. Especially if you're going to do something like MMA, where there's so many different aspects, there's so much striking, so many different things you got to focus on. You can't not train 7 days a week, and I think multiple times a day. That's just you know what I've seen. You know.
Yeah, my wife just had my daughter Millie, and I was training for the Worlds, the European Championships. And, like, they both had the flu. I'm like, sorry, I got to go. Like, this is something I've trained for, and I know I'm going to be out of the country. But, and my wife was like, go, Kurt. I get it. We'll be okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, my focus, it was a lot different, and I wasn't where I should have been, you know, my knee and this and that. I could sit here and make excuses, but I had no business being there. 3 years ago I did that, but I still did it, and I still put as much time as I possibly could in it. So I was happy with even losing. I was happy with my outcome. I shouldn't have lost, but I wasn't as focused as I used to be. Things were changing, and it just, you know, just little things got into my way.
Now, I know you must be sick of being asked about the Roberto Crane fight, but even though this was one of the greatest comebacks anyone had ever seen at the time, so we don't have to go into huge detail, but if folks at home, just watch the fight. If you haven't already, you'll be glad you did. Kurt, I guess we should acknowledge that you survived the devastating head kick in that fight. I know you lost a lot of memory of what happened, but I do think you should take more credit for coming back the way you did. You may not have been fully aware of your surroundings, but just means more that it was more impressive, and you proved that even a headless zombie Kurt Pellegrino could take a man down and beat him into submission and probably eat his brain if you wanted to.
Yeah, you know, I look at that fight as I wanted to fight Alberto Crane when he was the King of the Cage champion. I knew so much of Alberto. I could actually say I was impressed with him. I never want to say I'm I'm a huge fan of Dan Gable. But instead of me saying I'm a fan, I usually say I'm really impressed with that guy. He's an amazing human being. And that's how I felt about Alberto Crane. He won the world championships like BJ Penn did, the only two Americans at the time to do it. He had the King of the Cage championship belt. And I was just like, when he fought in the UFC, when he fought Roger Huerta, I said, dude, I have to fight this kid. I don't know what it is. I just want to beat him in a grappling match. I want to beat him in a wrestling match. I want to beat him in a boxing fight. I don't know what it is. And we were at a UFC summit in Vegas, and he came over to me for the first time and, like, touched my shoulder. And I was like, yo, what's up, man? He's like, did you get the news? I'm like, I don't know. What news are you talking about? And he's like, we're fighting.
Wow.
And I was like, we're fighting? And at that moment, I didn't like him no more. I was just like, what? He's like, me and you are fighting. I go, I was actually kind of mean. Like, I was ready to fight at that moment. Because that's something like, when I'm going to fight someone, like, we're not friends no more. Like, you're not that, like, human that I was impressed about. Now I want to, like, pick you to pieces. And I'll never forget in the interview when they were interviewing me. Back then, I told people how I felt. And the UFC wasn't used to that. So, like, you hear, like, McGregor and all these people talking shit and they make all this money. I tried doing it back then, but they were like, I don't know if you should be saying that. Like, I was like, I can beat Alberto in a wrestling match. I can beat him in a boxing match. I'll beat him in a jiu-jitsu match. There's no way he can beat me. I'm going to tap him out. And they're like, maybe you should, like, stop the camera. Maybe you should stop because it sounds a little cocky. I'm like, the only way he's going to beat me is if he kicks me in the face. I swear to God. And this dude kicks me in the face.
Go for
it. It was
just
the craziest thing ever. You know, and I didn't even know I was there. I was like, if you watch the fight when he knocked me out and guillotined me, and I get out of the guillotine, he puts me in an umaplata. I was wiping blood off of my hands on his shorts because I didn't understand why my hands were wet. And it was my blood. Like, it was really crazy. I didn't wake up until halfway in round one. I didn't know where I was until round two.
Yeah, that's like just a combination of being natural fighter, highly trained, and those things come together and basically are programmed, you know, in your body. And while your brain is rebooting, you're kind of like on autopilot, you know?
Yeah, you just have to, like, I always tell people in the gym, we go 99% when we box and kick. And we do that because if you punch me in the face and you get me walking the invisible stairs, then you just try to punch me to make me kind of work through being, like, knocked out and standing, you know what I mean? And you learn how to work through that. And those have been plenty of times where I've been hit hard and people had to carry me through the round because I didn't know where I was. But then all of a sudden, it happens in a fight and it works.
You fought at the highest level of competition in the UFC against some of the best known and most skilled fighters of the era in one of the most competitive weight classes. I think many of your best known fights are ones where you took damage and then came back. Obviously, fans find that incredibly exciting, although I suspect you didn't go in there intending to show your durability. What do you think was your best performance in the UFC?
Wow. I would want to think about the first one that comes in my mind was my fight with Junior Asuncao, because it was my first win in the UFC, my second fight, and I went in there on a purpose, and Randy Couture was the commentator, which was amazing, and I finished a black belt in one round. I tapped him. But I think when I fought Thiago Tavares, because that fight got number two fight of UFC.com for the whole year, changed my life. I won the fight of the night, and that was just the start of my career. But that guy was a black belt in jiu-jitsu, black belt in Muay Thai, really good. He was he was the next big thing in the division. Everyone was scared of him, and I actually wanted to fight him. It was right after I lost to Nate Diaz, and I said, listen, my agent said, you shouldn't fight this kid. He's the real deal. He's going to beat Sean Sherk. And I said, well, I think I could beat Sean Sherk too. So this is who I want. And then a week, and he didn't make the fight for me for a week. So I called Joe Silva and I said, this is who I want to fight. And they said, if you lose, we're going to cut you. And I said, great. And that training camp was like Rocky III. Like, I was crying, riding a bike. My white belts were beating me up sparring. Like, I was just a mess. And then when the cage door shut, I was a freaking animal, and I just tried to kill him. I dropped him 3 times in round 1, gave him 67 stitches in his face, broke his eye socket, his cheekbone. Like, I just kind of went crazy on him. And it was such a crazy back-and-forth fight. I mean, my whole body was dyed red, and my hair was pink after the fight was over from his blood.
Yeah.
And then, like, the other fight was being choked against the Camoys. Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah. Well, I was going to talk about that, but I wanted to – your fight with Rob Emerson was one of the most impressive. If anyone doesn't know Emerson, we had him on the show a while back. He's one of the most impossible fighters to finish. And I think you put him away, right?
Yeah, you know, that's a – you know, everyone always asks me the questions you ask me, and I usually always say Thiago just because of me actually being afraid to fight the guy and fought him anyway and won. But – one of the most impressive fights I think I really had was fighting the best striker in my division, which was Rob Emerson. And he's never been finished up to that point. And he was the hardest hit. Like, Mark Delagrotti told me when I was training at Sit Yad Tong with Kenny Florian, he goes, you're fighting Rob. And I said, yeah. He goes, take him down, dude. And I was like, why? He's like, because that's the hardest kicking kid that I've ever held mitts for. He do not. And I go, you got it. And Kenny, I never forgot Kenny going, Mark, you're such an idiot. Kurt's not going to take him down. Because I was so impressed with how they told me how great he was at stand-up. And they were like, he stood toe-to-toe with Jens Pulver, and Jens couldn't finish him. I'm like, okay. So I wanted to show them how good I was. So I stood up with him, and I beat him standing. He actually took me down twice. And then in round two, Kenny's like, yo, cut the shit. Take him down and finish him. I was like, okay, coach. And that's exactly what I did.
Yeah. Well, that's like, you know, fighting, going in the fire, going close to the fire to get the glory, you know. And a lot of people fight safe. And that's, I think a lot of it comes down to that mindset. But then you mentioned that the Fabricio Camoys fight. That was another very good performance where you show toughness and just how world class your grappling was. I think altogether you put a 7-5 record in the UFC, which could have been 8-4 if a split decision had gone your way. And of course, your one of the most infamous fights was against Nate Diaz, and that was a matchup everyone was excited for at the time because you both had formidable reputations as grapplers. And the two of you were among the most, entertaining fighters to watch. Of course, the infamous ending, we could talk about in a minute, but what was your recollection of the lead-up to that fight? Were you at a place mentally at the time, like a good place mentally going into that fight?
No, actually, it was. There was a lot of things going on in my personal life with moving from Florida to New Jersey. A lot of things, I tried getting out of the fight 3 days before the fight. So it was just some management problems, and it really played a giant role. I was stuck in Colorado for over a month, literally by myself, had no one to train with, no training partners. I was supposed to get training partners to come in once a week, and I didn't get it. And it got really weird and crazy. And, you know, I wasn't in the right form. And I'm not saying that the outcome would have been any different. I'm just saying that the guy that fought in round one wanted to just get it over with and go home. Mm-hmm. And then the guy that came in the round two gave 2 shits and then just left and went home.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I didn't even care I lost, and I've always cared when I lost. That was the only fight I really didn't care and was just glad to be back in New Jersey at the time.
Well, you were absolutely all over Diaz on the ground, but I give credit to Nate for having such an excellent defense and being able to survive until he had an opportunity. But
Nate Diaz is an animal.
Yeah. And you were landing some huge shots, but he must have felt pretty tough when you were hitting him with those shots from the top and the back. Honestly, I think people have forgotten that Nate Diaz was getting smashed in that fight. You almost TKO'd him from one of the crucifixes that I've seen.
Yeah, Nate Diaz, the Diaz brothers are animals, bro. They're as tough as they come. People think that I hate Nate Diaz. I love Nate's the fucking man, bro. You know, he beat the shit out of Conor McGregor, in my opinion, twice.
Yeah.
So, I think Nate's great. I have people, will send me, gifts on Instagram and be like, fuck you, Kurt. And I'm like, okay, I still think Nate's great, so. And then, like, yo, bro, we didn't mean that. We think you're great, too. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, it doesn't bother me. Like, you know, I was there. I did it. I lived that life. Outcomes are outcomes. It makes you who you are in life. And then I went on a five-fight win streak after that. So,
what about the infamous?
Is a good thing.
Yeah, you learn absolutely. What about the infamous double bird triangle where Diaz did that to you? At the time, did you have any awareness that that was going on?
No. No, I really had no clue. And I really didn't know until I watched the fight a couple years later, because whenever it came on, I just wouldn't watch. I don't even think I've ever watched the whole fight ever.
What was your response to finding out?
I didn't care.
Why do you think he did it though? Because do you think he was angry at you for the wagging no finger to when he was trying to camorra you? Why do you think he did it? Or is he just being cocky at the time?
I honestly couldn't tell you what was going through his mind. I have no idea. I'm glad he did it because it was awesome, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's high. A lot of people watch. Got a lot of attention. And what was interesting is that after the fight, the Diaz brothers celebrated, but they also seemed to give you respect afterwards in the cage, not trash talking like they do with some other opponents. I thought that was interesting.
The Diaz brothers are cool because they just want to fight. That's just it. They're not here to they're just here to fight. So I actually remember going in the locker room to see Nate after the fight was over, which I did to everyone, whether I won or lost. And I went into the locker room and Nate kind of stood up and was going to be a douche and charge me. I was by myself,
right.
And Nick actually grabbed him by the neck and was like, you show this motherfucker respect. He fought you with respect. He came in here to shake your hand. And I actually was like, wow, that was pretty neat. I didn't, you know,
yeah.
But again, they're fighters, bro. I mean, that's what they are. I mean, they're great human beings, but at the time, that's who we are. People always ask me, was it fun being a fighter? It was the worst job in the universe. I'm a contract fighter. What's good about being a contracted fighter? My job is to hurt you, and I want it to. I wanted to hurt you. Like when I slammed Fabricio's head, I didn't give a shit at the time. He was choking me. And I didn't want to tap no more. I was done. I was like, you're going to have to fucking choke me out cold. That's just how it is. That's life. I'm ready to die. And so if a reporter said, well, what happens if you would have died? I'm like, I don't know. We're here to fight. That's what you. I didn't try to kill him. But I tried to.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Your last UFC fight was a very close split decision loss to Gleison Tibau, who was has some wins in the UFC lightweight division. What was the that fight like? I mean, this was clearly the best version of Tibau, I think, ever that we've seen. It could have very easily had the title time, I think. How do you feel about that fight looking back on it?
I still think I beat Gleison Tibau. I don't know what one of the judges who said I lost every round, that was the reason why I lost. And I really do think I beat Gleason. I mean, I almost knocked him out where he fell down. I picked him up. I slammed him. Only thing Gleason mm-hmm. did was put me against the cage, and I kept working off the cage. I mean, a fight's a fight. I get it, but I still think I won that fight. I mean, I had 6 weeks back from ACL surgery. I fought that fight. 6 weeks. I'm sorry, 6 months. I had ACL reconstructive surgery and fought Gleason within 6 months. How many people do that?
Now, the only person I know is Tony Ferguson did something similar to that.
I mean, there's a very short list.
Yeah. And I saw a lot of media outlets scored that fight a draw, really down the middle. So it was very, very interesting. Then coming off such a close fight with T-Bow, you took on Patricio Pitbull, everyone agreed that fight was stopped early. What was your recollection of how that fight went?
I got punched in the head. I was then on his leg, taking him down, and the ref stopped the fight.
Yeah.
And then I remember Dr. Sherry and Nick Limbo came in, and I was like, this was the worst. And even they said it. The doctor's like, he is completely capable of fighting. I mean, looked at my eyes, because I'm like, bro, tell me if I was knocked out. And I was like, I was taking him down. And again, to be honest with you, I knew it was over. I was getting knocked down in training camps with like jabs, flash knockouts that I would just get fall and I'd get back up. So it was happening to me in the gym. And I knew something bad was going to happen, but I didn't think, you know, I would get hit and then I would just, you know, just do what I always do. That's how I fight. But I wanted to retire winning, but I, you know, it wasn't in my blood no more. You know, that lion cub grew up and he was old and didn't want to do it no more.
And from what I remember, you had never been TKO'd before that fight. Is that correct?
Never. I still don't think I was.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't think I was. I don't think I really had a chance.
And that must have been a very difficult note to retire on. What factors went into your decision to call it a career and move on? Was it just that you didn't have it anymore? Was it just, you know, you have a family now and whatnot?
Why don't I fight now?
No,
why did I retire?
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I want to be with my family. I think family is so much more important. My lovely wife, Tara, Millie, and Jimmy, and Curdy, and Priscilla. I'd rather be with them than be anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, like, I love going to the gym. I love helping others out. And I love coming home and being with my family. I spend so much time away from them. And I don't like being away from them.
Yeah, that's definitely something that comes across with you, Kurt, is your love for your family. That's definitely something that everybody understands and can see. It's quite admirable.
My wife is my high school girlfriend. We dated all through high school. We reconnected, 5 years ago, and I've never left her side ever and had two babies super, super fast. I have so much more time I need to get back for all the time lost.
Yeah. What about, and we're going to wrap it up here in just a minute or so. What about the physically and mentally? Kurt, with such a long career that you've had and so many wars, there's bound to be a lot of injuries. How have you felt physically and mentally since retiring?
I just had a partial knee replacement.
Yep.
I actually had like 14 knee surgeries. After my, you know, once my knee starts to get better, I can start rolling again. I actually think I feel pretty good. I'm really hungry to get back on the mats and roll. I just got to make sure I don't mess up this hard work because, like I said, it's been 14 surgeries. I don't want to do any more. And hopefully this will get me to the position where I could start rolling with my students again and enjoying what I love so much, and that's working hard.
Do you ever get the urge to fight again?
Well, yeah, you know what, Bob? I would love to fight again if someone on the other line wouldn't kick me or punch me in the face. And I
maybe,
think that goes the same thing for all my training partners. You know, what I like to do, I just don't want to do it. I'm be afraid if someone would punch me in practice, it would make me want to just do it again. I like the coaching, the part. I like telling people how to get better. But I do have the urge to win a world championship in no gi and the gi. It's something that I still have a dream and a goal, and I'm going to hold on to that for a little bit. I've done so much in this PD. I'm an ADCC veteran, you know, for Abu Dhabi. I won the Pan Ams, gi and no gi. And I just, the only title I've never done is a jiu-jitsu world title. And it'd be, you know, I won countless super fights. It'd be nice to have that medal in my attic in a shoebox.
There you go. Real quickly, I just want to talk about the gym. I mentioned at the beginning before you came on the show, you've expanded it. You've made some more mat space. You've got a lot of students signing up here. Pellegrino's MMA is hot. It really is. And I know many gym owners and small businesses have been negatively impacted by this ridiculous ongoing pandemic situation and whatnot. How much difficulty has the pandemic been for you? And what can you say about the Pellegrino MMA?
You know, it's been hard for a lot of us. I can actually say my gym is thriving.
Yes.
My students right now are amazing. Everyone's getting together and everyone's a part of a team, and the team is helping the team grow. I can't do it on my own. Everyone has so much loyalty and respect and love for each other. And if someone goes out to a bar or someone goes out of town or out of state, they're getting they're getting checked for COVID.
Yep.
And that's the way you keep things going. You try to stay training with one team, and not shop around and go to other places, because that's how you get exposed to different things and different people. And if people that are struggling in their gyms or this and that, just got to sit back and look at what you're allowing your students to do. I let my students do whatever they want. They're free. It's a free world. But if we want to keep the gym that we love healthy and strong, we got to stick together in these trying times. And that's what the gym has been showing. And I'm very fortunate. And the people I have in the gym right now, I couldn't be happier. We just signed up 14 new students.
Yeah.
This month. So
yeah, and I saw one of them yesterday.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
one,
and I
one
saw
of them.
Every student. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that's definitely, you're doing a lot of kid classes. There's so much stuff going on there.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, and I tell people if I catch you in bars, this and that, and if I see, I ask everyone for a friend request on Facebook, and I go, I'm basically like Big Brother. I'm just keeping tabs on you. If I see you out in large crowds or this or that, I'm going to ask you to get tested before you come into the gym, and it's been working. And people understand
exactly.
It. There's, you know, people could be with their moms or their dads that are sick or compromised. But we have to understand that we do have to start living our lives at some point. And I think it's starting to happen.
Well, it's the power of self-regulation. We've regulated ourselves. We did a NAGA tournament last week, and everybody was responsible, Kip Kohler and everybody. It wasn't too much of an inconvenience, but we grappled. No problems. Here along the Jersey Shore where I'm at, businesses have regulated themselves. It's the power of self-regulation that is keeping us going, keeping all of us healthy, and you've done – a great job in preparing and you know, in compliance and whatnot. And that's why we're able to do what we do. We cherish it. We don't take it for granted, you know.
Yeah, we're all getting there. It's going well. I'm very happy. We could always do better, and that's what I'm striving for, to do better, create great students, and hopefully, you know, you can't be at everything for everyone. You can only, you know, there's only one person, but we do have lots of coaches that are there on staff and available to help others, and that's just how we got to do it. And right now it's working, and like I said, I'm very happy to be have everyone that's around me in my life today, and we're going to keep growing and add more people to our lives as well.
Absolutely. Well, Kurt, listen, man, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. It's an honor to train under you, and everything you said about that school, about your school is spot on, man. I constantly am talking about how great it is on Blog Talk Radio here on Facebook, and how you can grow, you can develop your skills, and you can grow, and you can have coaches and teammates that are very, very caring and very, very supportive and whatnot. And, you know, it's that mindset. I think that the mindset that we have in there is growing, and it's, you know, going on to other people. It's like the law of attraction and whatnot. And so it's really, really a pleasure to have you on the program and to have you as my coach, my friend.
Well, it's awesome to be your coach, and I look forward to seeing you achieve your goals.
Thank you, Kurt. I'll see you probably tomorrow, if not Monday, my friend.
All right. Hopefully it's tomorrow.
Yep, I'll be there. Thank you, boss.
All right, buddy. Bye.
Bye. That was Kurt Pellegrino here on Carson's Corner. Man, that was really, really good stuff, man. A lot of wisdom there, and something that you know, the individual mindset. We have Dan Quinn on the phone. We're going to get to him, but it's that individual mindset of nothing else matters. You know, yeah, you have to have a life. You have to pay bills. I understand that. You know, you can't. But wrestling. You know, his commitment, his mindset to wrestling. When he was training for the UFC, nothing else matters. You got to get in that zone. You got to do, and you got to have the right attitude. I think MMA, a lot of it is mental. You have the right mental attitude, you can accomplish anything. Without further ado, let's go to Dan Quinn. We have him on the program. Dan, how are you, man?
Dan, I'm doing great, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Thank you for calling. We have we only have about a half hour or so, and I have a lot of not a lot, but I have a decent amount of emails that I'd like to get going if I could here.
No problem.
Beautiful, beautiful. All right, the first one comes from Mac, and this is Detroit, Michigan. Dear Dan, I heard the latest Carson's Corner interview, and I was very inspired. What I wanted to ask you was, is the violin a technique that requires athletic ability, or can it be learned through training and practice? Will the best violin players be pure athletes, or will they be persons who practice hard and work hardest?
Anybody with fingers can play the violin. Two fingers in and up to the bottom of the G-spot, two fingers pressing down below her belly button, touching those inside fingers, playing a violin action with clitoral stimulation equals 1 to 2 orgasms a minute for even an hour if played correctly. So you don't need athletic ability. You just need a willing partner.
And when was the last time that you performed the violin?
Over a year ago.
Cool.
I was taking time off to get stevia famous. Not chasing pussy, but I'm going to get... I actually have 2 models lined up for when I get out to do a violin video. And Raleigh Price from 5150 said that he would be willing to videotape it.
Oh, wow. You still has he doing? I haven't spoken to him in a while. You still in contact with Riley?
Yeah, I talked with him for the first time in over a year. He's up in Portland, says he's doing well, and he's going to fly down to videotape the violin.
That's awesome. All right, Dan, I got another one. This comes from Shreveport, Louisiana. Mike, Dear Dan and Bob, got to tell you that interview is great. Dan sounds strong and well, and that's a good thing to hear. I was thinking about Dan, and I realized that he was first famous in the 1980s. If you think about it, and I see he was famous in the 1980s, 90s, 2000, 2010s, and now 2020s. That's a legit five decades that he's been famous or an athlete or celebrity. I just think that's remarkable. Not many people have that kind of staying power. Dan, to what do you attribute your continued relevance after all these years?
The fact that I discovered the violin and what stevia does. Stevia blends water into a natural gas that it can make engines to run off. That's actually cold fission, cold fusion, if you want. And the tragedy is that Lou Holtz fired me at Notre Dame, so nobody really knows who I am. If I was an NFL player, like I was destined to be, everybody would know my name. The violin would be famous by now. Stevia, for what it is and what it does, would be famous by now. It turns water into a gas and cures cancer, diabetes, and obesity. But relatively few people know about that because most of America doesn't know who the true Dan Quinn is.
We have another email, and this is from a PhD, James Sneed in New York City. Dan, I listened with interest to your comments on your observations about mice going gay or possibly bi in a cage. As a university animal behavioral specialist lecturer, I had to hit the books to see if there's been any research before your findings. I'm happy to report that you were the first researcher to see this behavior among rodents. There was some research about homosexual behavior among moose that was done in Saskatchewan in the 1940s, but since then there hasn't been much. With your permission, I'd like to contact you and discuss your findings and the possibility of relaunching animal studies of this kind. Please comment and indicate your willingness to help me on this topic. Thank you for your time and consideration. Wow, that sounds like a great research opportunity, Dan.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I'd be interested in that. You know, I put blue and red dots on male and female and saw men go gay, saw them fighting women, women defending babies, you know, from getting eaten. It was absolute carnage. Shout out to Team Carnage, by the way. Mm-hmm. And it was when animals lack enough space. It didn't matter how much food or water there was. It was all due to space and overcrowding. So I'd be more than interested in to take up that research and do some findings.
Okay. Let's see here. We got a whole bunch of more. We have one here. Dan, what's the word on Ernie the Barber? I sure used to see like seeing him on your videos. Was it related to Treba? Is Ernie still alive and well?
Ernie's still alive. Ernie and I had a little falling out over my Hyundai that I sold him. He thinks he's going to get it for free. We decided to leave it up to marijuana, and I haven't received any marijuana as of today for that Hyundai. And I said 20 ounces. That might be a little high for market value. I was thinking $100 an ounce for $2,000, but since weed is going for about $150, it might be like 12 to 13 ounces. As of today, I haven't been paid a single ounce of weed, and we still have to get that taken care of. Otherwise, I'm going to blow that car up.
Dan, we have another one here from Gunnar Granado in Gunnison, Colorado. Dan, I was so happy to hear you on the recent Carson's Corner. You're an awesome guy, and I'm relieved to know that I'll be able to hear your interviews and hopefully see your videos again. You're smart and engaging, yet challenging and complex. Thank you for being you. Very complimentary, Dan. What's your response to that?
Thank you. There's been so many haters that it's nice to hear people that are complimentary. The fact is, you know, my IQ said I was 154, but before I started taking punches, I think that's genius, close to it. The fact that I discovered the violin, upgraded the Kama Sutra, that in and of itself has improved genius. The fact that I discovered that stevia turns water into a gas, that happened by that was a mistake. I was going to go running, didn't want to shake all the stevia into the water and see all the suds, so I put a bunch of stevia in the water in a blender, and it blew the top of the blender up, and the top of the blender hit the ceiling, and there was all this white soup over the place, kind of like Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory when they had that the big car, you know, the white soup coming out. And that white soup can power engines. They can make engines to run off that, Bob. They can make engines to run out of water. They can make engines to run out of split H2O.
Dan, we have another one from Alan Terry, Springfield, Missouri. What advice would you give Donald Trump? He seems hell-bent on tearing this country apart. Do you think he needs to be on stevia? What would you do? What would you like to do to Melania? Please address everything I ask one question at a time. Please, Bob, please ask Dan one at a time so we can cover all three of my questions.
Okay. What would I like to do to Melania? Play the violin. Donald can play. He would up his A game. I mean, I'm sure that Melania didn't marry him for anything but his money. You know, I mean, think about it. She's young and beautiful, and he is a physical specimen. You know, right. It is what it is. And Donald Trump should accept defeat in grace, with some grace, show a little grace, and welcome Joe Biden into the ballgame. He's demeaning America around the planet, making us look bad.
And do you think he needs to be on stevia?
I think he definitely needs to be on stevia. He's getting jowly, and he isn't in perfect physical shape. I'll tell you what, Bob, my stomach is slimming down. I've started to do sumo squats, which is aiding the process. But I came in here fat at 254, and I was 235 the other day. And it's all due to stevia. And cutting weight.
That's amazing. And I was telling people that Dan is on his way down with weight. Dan has always managed to control his weight and really be very, very physically in shape. Dan, we have another one from Miles Brisson, Temple, Texas. Dan, is there anything I could do to help you? I don't have much money, and I'm not really anyone important, but I think you're a good person. I would like to see you back on top, like when you beat Bon Lapua. That was awesome. Also, I watched a video where you made with Riley Prysock where you showed some foot speed in Walmart parking lot. That was great. So what can we do to help you? Is Riley Prysock helping?
Riley Prysock's going to help by filming the violin and using 5150 to get it famous. I was thinking about selling videotapes for $20 a piece to be the cheapest how-to video and the most popular how-to video in the history of this world, how to take women to 1 to 2 orgasms a minute for over an hour. Think about it. Think about the implications.
Yeah. All
now,
right, Dan, we have – go ahead.
For financial help, I like people that play the violin to give $20 an orgasm to a GoFundMe account I haven't made yet, but maybe we can work on that together. It takes money to do anything in this world, and I'm poor.
Yep.
I'm on Social Security for a head injury, of all things. I shouldn't have been fighting the entire time that I was, but luckily I didn't take too many headshots like Bon Lapua. And every little bit counts. So if we could get a GoFundMe account or some kind of account to help Dan Quinn, that would be great.
Yeah, that should definitely be arranged. We have another one for Patrick O'Toole, Boston, Massachusetts. Dear Dan, can you please describe the play for all the new listeners? I was in tears over of anger when Bob mentioned about Lou Holtz getting an award from President Trump. That's just not right. So please tell the new listeners about your play, which is an incredible defensive football play.
The play only happened because Lou Holtz ordered me to stay home and look for a sweep. If it was normal defense, I would have been in boots mode, you know, like stomping at the bit, chomping at the bit. Stomping my feet, getting ready to go, and that would have alerted the offensive tackle for the fourth tight end to shield me off and block me. If it wasn't for Holtz ordering me to stay home and look for a sweep, I would have been blocked. It was pure athleticism that allowed me to get to the play, and since Lou Holtz ordered me to stay home and look for a sweep, as soon as I hit the sideline, Lou Holtz was enraged and fired me on the spot. I had a defensive coach tell me that I was demoted to the fourth team, and there's a segment of that film which was lost when I lost my mobile home, where I'm sitting on the bench, and in my mind, I'm looking at Holtz, thinking that I would have him killed if I continued in football, got some money, and I had to get out of it, and I chose boxing. I put football on the spot. That was the last time that I was interested in football. I gave it up.
Wow. Dan, what is this is one from Ron Houseman of Baltimore. Dan, what is battle mode? My friend turned me on to you, and he tells me that your body goes into battle mode or something like that. Like maybe part of your body has a battle mode. Does your body harden into battle mode?
Battle mode is that's what my dick is in, battle mode, when it shrivels up. Thank God I'm a grower. But battle mode is something that I should have been in every time that I fought. It's when I get angry. And I wasn't angry one time when I fought, except for Bon Lapua. When I got hit, I got angry, and I ended up breaking his collarbone. I'm an anger-based fighter, and I couldn't generate the anger that it took to transfer that into the cage where it was most important.
We have another one here, and this is from a listener from St. Louis who takes stevia daily but doesn't identify themselves. Dan, we need to find someone who can nominate you for a Nobel Prize. I think that's the best way to get your discoveries famous. Your thoughts? I don't even think curing a stage 4 cancer patient would be as good for you as a Nobel Prize nomination.
Well, curing a stage 4 cancer victim would hasten the Nobel Prize. Hasten. I slurred that a little bit. Whatever works. You know, I think eventually, if everything works out like it should, I'm the one to discover what massive amounts of stevia does. I should win a Nobel Prize for that. I'll win a Nobel Prize for stevia turning water into a natural gas if it's not stolen by some academic out there. You know, but I have enough videotape or videos on TV, on YouTube, that prove that, you know, I discovered this how many years ago. I just haven't been able to find an academic to listen up to this point. I went to Sac State, and they called campus security on me. You know, I mean, I know that there's been shootings at universities, and so they have a heightened sense of awareness, you know. But calling campus security when I was trying to get a professor to look at stevia blended in water was a joke.
We have another one here. Let's see here. Okay. This is from Jack Norris of Memphis, Tennessee. If I perfect the violin, will my partner still enjoy penetrative sex?
More so. The violin primes them. You know, it gets them in a receptive mood. It exhausts them. Her pelvis will attack his face if he plays it correctly. It's a workout for her. She's burning calories while she's having orgasms. And she'll enjoy regular intercourse more so after the fact of playing the violin. That's what I found in my experience.
Interesting.
It also,
very technical.
It also takes the pressure off. Everybody thinks that the pleasure of a woman with their cock instead of their tongue, you know, or their fingers.
Right.
Give a woman, you know, 20, 40, 60, 80, 100 orgasms, and she's satisfied. You can go for 2 minutes, and you're done, and it's over.
Very, very interesting question. Technical. Thank you, Dan. We have another one from Brian Loft in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Dan, please tell me some stories about the craziest nuts in there with you. It's amazing to hear how great you sound, and you sound like the same intelligent guy that I followed for years, but there have to be some pure nutcases in there. What is the one story from your time there that you could tell us now?
There's a sad case of a woman banging her head against the wall continuously.
Oh, wow.
She's beautiful and trapped in a body with way too much fat. I've mentioned stevia to her. She sounded receptive, but then again, who knows? I don't really want to get into divulging too much because, you know,
I understand.
Privacy standards and all that.
Sure.
But there's people in here. I don't belong here. You know, I was put in here because I thought that someone had burned my stomach, which they had. they put something in my stomach that burned, then I got constipated, couldn't take a shit, and food backed up to where I wasn't eating, and I got down to 160 pounds, Bob, and I shot up to 254 when I was in the hospital, and I'm in the process of taking that extra fat off the stevia, and it's time for Dan Quinn to hit the streets and get stevia and the violin famous.
Dan, we have another one from Rebecca Ash, Chicago. Please come on Carson's Corner every other week, Dan. You're great to listen to. You have charisma. Question, do you really think you are Maitreya, or was that a ploy to get collective attention? Where did the Maitreya thing start with you?
What was the question again? What was a ploy?
Yeah, do you really think you are Maitreya, or was that a ploy to get our collective attention? And where did the Maitreya thing start with you?
I didn't even know about Maitreya until my mom mentioned him. But I know that I was touched by God when I was in Notre Dame. I was enveloped in a golden halo, which brought me to my knees and told me that I was going to be the richest person on earth. And with that money, I was in slavery, which everybody is born into unless you're a millionaire. And I discovered how to make the Fountain of Youth, giving Peachy, the cancerous cat that was about dead, you know, all that water laying underneath that toxic layer of soap when you blend stevia and water, brought her back into perfect health, knocked 74 pounds, 6 cancerous breast tumors off my uncle in 4 months, put that into a bottle and sell it. It becomes the most popular drink on the planet. And I become the most rich. I become the wealthiest individual on this planet by having discovered it. So, you know, am I Maitreya? No one else has come out and claimed that. I have it tattooed on my stomach. I was touched by God. And one of my goals is to replace women into their natural role at the head of the household. You know, there was a time back in the day, Bob, I'm sure you're aware of this, where women were actually at the head of the table. They actually were the shot callers. And then something happened where they disappeared in that crucial role. And men start leading this herd, this animal herd called humans. And in 2,000 plus years, we brought it to the brink of extinction. We need to get women more in an authoritative ruler class to help save this planet.
Do we got another one from A.A. Porter. Dan Quinn, should the NCAA test for stevia? If yes, why don't they? Also, is there any indication that stevia could help with COVID-19?
I think that stevia ups your immune system. It ups your pH level. I think that it couldn't do any harm to the COVID-19. I have been incarcerated for the most part, so I haven't had any contact with it. But it has a high pH level, and you can't go wrong using stevia. Did I answer the question?
Yeah. Yeah, stevia is an all-natural substance. And, you know, as far as the NCAA test.
Yeah, should they test for it?
Yeah.
Stevia it is an enhancer. Stevia plus marijuana acts like natural methamphetamine. I've been up for over 7 days on stevia and marijuana alone. I was doing a self-test. I could have gone longer. There was no reason to do so. It would only – they just announced snacks and everybody's running for them. I'm good. I'm not on a diet, but overeating isn't part of my regimen now. But like I said, stevia and marijuana together act like natural meth. It's a definite enhancer. That's what I was on when I fought Malapua and weathered that big shot, you know, which would knock most people out. But I recovered, and the fact that I recovered and came back so quickly, that's amazing. To take a punch like that, where usually it would zap the strength of people to where they were listless in the following rounds if they made it. For me to end Lapua, that's a testament to the power of nature and stevia and marijuana together.
Yeah, how much did you weigh going into that fight then? He looked a lot bigger than you, Don Lapua.
Oh, yeah, he came in at 255 plus. I came in at 205.
Yeah, that's incredible. We have another one, Dan. Yeah, I mean, it's 50 pounds, and you know, that's like something you'd see back in the early UFC days, you know?
Yeah.
Dan, we have another one here. This is actually the last one. It's from Billy. Dan, what would you say to Joe Rogan if you could? What would you say to Dana White if you could? And what would you say to Frank Mir if you could?
To Frank, I'd say apologies for not shaking your hand after I lost to you. I was so focused on winning. I'm not a bad loser, but I could have been a better loser than I was. And congratulations on making you look better for winning the UFC. For Dana White, I would apologize for some of the things that I said in my videos previously and ask for his apology. I didn't call his office. I don't even have his number, for Christ's sake. How would I call his private number and threaten him and then TMZ blasting my picture all over the world, you know, for threatening Dana White? But I'd apologize to Dana and ask him permission to go on Joe Rogan's show, because I've upgraded the Kama Sutra and I've discovered cold fusion. And out of everybody that he said on his show, no one can lay claim to anything like that.
Well, listen, Dan, we really appreciate you coming on and answering these many listener questions that we've got. You have the floor. Is there anything you want to say in closing?
Play the violin. Two fingers pressing down on the belly button, below the belly button, against the inside fingers. Plus clitoral stimulation brings a woman to one or two orgasms a minute for even an hour. I've brought women to over 100 before, their pelvis attacking my face, being exhausted, having to take breaks to take sips of water because they're using so much energy, having so much pleasure. And for people to get on stevia, go to Amazon.com, get their Mood, M-O-O-D, and Mind, M-I-N-D, stevia. It's the best and the cheapest on the market. And start drinking as much stevia as they can stomach. Put a teaspoon in each 12 ounces or 24 ounces that they're drinking. It'll be sickeningly sweet. They'll soon get used to the taste. It'll start their production of, they'll start shitting their brains out. Didn't you start to shit when you were at my house?
Yeah.
It cleans you out. Stevia is a water purifier. The body is mostly water, and it purifies the water as you're drinking it.
Dan, do you have time to take a phone call? We got a caller here. Looks like 817 area code.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay. All right, you're on the air with Bob Carson and Dan Quinn.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. I just wanted to say hello, and this is Brad again calling from Texas. And I was thinking about it. I was talking to my friend Jack, and we were thinking it would be awesome if you could reconcile with Diego Sanchez and get him back on the right track. What do you think about that?
I wouldn't mind getting in touch with Diego again. Reconciling, we didn't have a falling out. He got beat by, who was it? Jonathan
BJ
Blank.
Penn.
BJ Penn, there you go. And dropped off the face of the earth. I haven't heard from him since. And I don't know if he took it out on stevia. I think stevia gave his body the condition to go through five rounds of getting his ass kicked, where most people give up, you know, after two or three rounds.
Yeah. Yeah.
And getting Diego back on the bandwagon wouldn't be a bad thing because he's famous. He's more famous than I am. And
Didn't you cure his girlfriend? Didn't you help his girlfriend?
Yeah. Ali Sonoma had a lump in her breast. She was going to the doctor, crying herself to sleep, and stevia banished it in 14 days.
Awesome.
Wow.
You're the man. Hey,
yeah,
Bob,
Thanks, Brad. I appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, Diego is, you know, he's still fighting. He's just a strange, strange guy. But, you know, I would hope, Dan, that what happened? Did he stop calling you? He just stopped returning your phone calls? Returned Hollywood or what?
You know, he didn't. There wasn't any phone calls to return. I didn't even have his telephone number. He was calling me the entire time. I never asked him for his number. He just stopped calling.
Okay, yeah. I haven't been able. I tried to get in touch with them since then too, because we had you both on the show years ago, and I haven't been able to get in touch. Maybe I could look to see if I have his number. Or see, I doubt he would come back on the program. But well, listen. In any event, also too, Dan, before we let you go, what's an update as far as when you're getting out of that facility? Do you have any court hearings coming up, or what can you tell us about that?
I've actually been released. You know, I'm not out of here yet. They're looking for a place for me to stay. COVID makes it difficult finding a place.
Okay.
Because everybody's so paranoid. But as soon as they find a place for me in Sacramento, I'm out of here. They just haven't been.
Okay.
It's a combination of not enough people looking and this place not looking for me.
Right, and it could be a few months because, you know, it looks like we're headed for another lockdown, you know, for sure as these cases go up. So you think it could be several months before you get out of there, Dan?
Maybe it could be several months before I get out of here, are you asking?
Yeah.
It could be. Hopefully, God, I'm out of here before then. For one thing, I have two models lined up to do a violin video. I told Riley about the first one and sent him the video that she sent me on Snapchat, and he was like, God, she's good looking. She looks like a freak. I want to see that, you know. And then I found another model after talking to him. So I have two ladies lined up to do a violin video, but I can't do shit while I'm in here.
Yeah. Well, we hope that you get out soon, Dan, and yeah, it just seems like it'd be very difficult to be cooped up in that place for a long time. It seems like you're kind of restricted in there, but you're doing what you got to do, and you're surviving, and you're doing well. So,
thank you, Bob.
All right, Dan. Well, listen, let's do this again. I'll reach out to you about getting you back on the show to interact with the fans out there and read off some listener emails and. We'll go from there, my friend.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it greatly.
All right. Take care, Dan. Goodbye. All right. That was Dan Quinn here on Carson's Corner. I got to take a leak, ladies and gentlemen. And that's it. So just keep it right here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm just searching. Oh, yeah. Here's Coach by Tony Look Jr.
Questions we have as we grow, it's hard to find answers to what we don't know, but sometimes there's someone to whom we can turn to teach us life lessons. Help us to learn just what's important and what matters most, much more than our teacher, and we call them coach. Right there to guide us when we need a hand. They reach deep inside us and help us to stand. To lead by example in words and in deeds, and show us the courage we need to succeed. And I stand before you. I'm proud to boast. I'm one of the many who's learned from the coach. that you travel, the choices you make, the load that you carry, the chances you take. We raise our glasses and offer this toast to one who will always be known as the coach, to one who will always be known as the coach.
What a great song by Tony Luke Jr., ladies and gentlemen. All right, well, what else do we have here? Big thanks again to Kurt Pellegrino and, of course, Dan Quinn for joining us here today on the program. Let me see. I'm sure there's another UFC on this weekend. There's got to be. Every single weekend there's UFC. Last weekend we saw Glover Teixeira. Yes, there is. Paul Felder is fighting again. Paul Felder is fighting Rafael Dos Anjos. I don't know if this is going to be Paul Felder's last fight. This may be his retirement fight because Paul's, what, 36, 37 years old? You know, I mean, he's had a great career, but, I mean, I think really he's had some injuries, and I think that it may be close to the end here. Just my impression. I don't know, though. I can't say that. Kay Hansen is fighting. Did I ever tell you what happened with me and Kay? I posted something on Twitter a couple of years ago where she got like a last second submission. She's got a couple lucky submissions. And I took a poll or something like that, and she reposted it. And I got to this big debate, this big argument with her about whether or not she was lucky to have won her fight. It was an Invicta fight. And I got like 30 or 40,000 freaking impressions. It was insane. I got a lot of heat for that. She's in the UFC, and I don't know who she's fighting. I don't know this Corey McKenna. This doesn't really look like an interesting card, to be honest with you. I'm not really interested in seeing this, so I'm probably not even going to make an effort to watch this tomorrow. But in any event, my throat is getting sore here. It's been just luckily I haven't done all the talking. I've had some guests here that have done a lot of the talking, but I think I'm close to calling it a night here, okay? I'm really, really got to wake up early tomorrow. Got to go to the gym, and then I got to go to Pellegrino's, and that'll be my Saturday. So, again, big thanks to everybody. Thanks to those out there listening. Thanks to Brad from Texas for calling. Thanks to Kurt. And thanks to Dan Quinn. And until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.